This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We gotta stop them. They're gonna kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started? Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
It's time for the Brian Roux Show on Revolution Radio, coming to you from beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Brian and his guests talk about the big picture, the world view of reality with good and evil. They explore the truth and lies from aliens to globalists to advanced ancient civilizations.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
Welcome to Revolution Radio. This is April the 27th, Tuesday, 2021. This is the Brian Roux Show coming to you from sunny Vancouver. And what you can't see listening to Revolution Radio because it's audio is there's been a change in my life. I got a Braun electric shaver and I buzzed my head. So my hair is about three eighths of an inch long now. So if you want to see this, go to my BitChute channel, BitChute.com, Brian Roux, to see the real, true Brian Roux now. But these changes are not, they're not deep and transformational. It's more superficial. Like, you know, in the 60s, you know, in the early 60s, when guys wore like a white shirt and a tie and a jacket. And then by the late 60s, they had tie-dye shirts with long hairs and beards. Actually, that's just a superficial change, you know. That's just a superficial change. So really, I'm still the same Brian Roux. You know, maybe I've had some transformational experiences since the last show last week, but my hair doesn't indicate too much. But I won't talk too much about that since this is an audio show. But this is actually being filmed for my BitChute channel. If it makes the cut, not likely to put on YouTube because not many things are safe on YouTube. so for today, I'm going to talk a bit about just live on the air now. A bit about my biggest personal issue, which is the gray alien agenda as it relates to reptilians and international Jewish power. And then after that, I'm going to play you some recent talks that I gave myself. I usually have my guests on, but now I'm going to talk from the heart myself. My first talk is, these are all videos I've released just in recent days. My BitChute channel. The first one is called Invitation for You to Debate Canada's Highest Standard of Truth. That's 18 minutes long. And of course, I personally am the highest speaker of truth in Canada. We'll also discuss my modesty with that one. And the second talk I'll give is about 19 minutes long. It's called What is Truth? What is Your Opinion? Aha, that's something we often have to consider. Then I'll play a 2-minute, 39-minute video for you called You Are Obsessed with Adolf Hitler. So you gotta stay tuned for this shoe. So that's only about 40 minutes long. That'll be the first hour. Second hour, I got something special to play for you. I was just recently in touch with Elizabeth Cardo. She's the widow of Willis Cardo, who's a towering figure on the right in America since the 1950s. He created the Barnes Review. He created American Free Press. He created the Institute of Historical Review. He's done so much. He died in 2015, and she's still alive. And she was quite close personal friends with Mark Lane. Oh, you got to know Mark Lane is some of you might remember him. In 1966, he published a book and made a movie, which you can see on YouTube, called Rusted Judgment, about the big lies of the Warren Commission. And I'm going to play for you a video of him with William F. Buckley from December of 1966. I was 6 years old, so I wasn't involved in the filming of this. No, but with the copyright laws, and it's over, how many years is this? Over 50 years, right? So there's no copyright problem for Revolution Radio. So, wow, I was looking for a thumbnail for Lyndon Johnson, since I have more personal hatred for Lyndon Johnson than anyone else in history. And I accidentally stumbled upon this. And I knew Mark Lane was a close personal friend of my friend Elizabeth Cardo. So I'm just one person removed from Mark Lane. He was Jewish, and Elizabeth Cardo really trusted him, you know. And she felt he was trying to get at the truth of the Kennedy assassination. She told me stuff, and in the description of the video, I state that while Elizabeth Cardo is still alive, there's some things I'm not going to reveal about some things she told me. So, but for Revolution Radio, I'll say that I assume Mark Lane, being Jewish, he was protecting Israel and maybe even higher forces. Because President Kennedy, as far as I know, I've been told, I read, I'm not sure if this is true, but I read that President Kennedy ordered the CIA, or requested or instructed the CIA, to give UFO information to the control of the White House. So, wow, that alone is enough of a reason to assassinate him. And I'll explain in my talk coming up called Invitation for You to Debate Canada's Highest Standard of Truth. I changed my mind about UFO disclosure. The idea of, you know, complete UFO disclosure, just open up Area 51, bring the tour buses in, poke around the flying saucers, take them for test drives, let tourists, you know, look at the ancient flying saucer, Bob Lazar said. And open up the Pentagon files, share with America and the whole world. No. Brian Rue is now completely opposed to this, and I'll explain that. So what does this have to do with William F. Buckley, the actual name of the talk here? I got on my BitChute channel. I'm just going to pull that up for you here. And William F. Buckley had, I think, the longest running TV show in America for about 30 years, at least at the time. He was a conservative on the right. I must admit, this guy was really intelligent, and his intelligence comes through. Elizabeth Cardo, in her email, you'll read under the description of this video, because she allowed me to print her email. She got her permission for all this. She calls William F. Buckley a fool, and Mark Lane really handled Buckley well, but they were both very good. I mean, the quality of the intellectual discourse, and they're talking about Bobby Kennedy running against Lyndon Johnson. It's just chilling, because they assassinate Bobby Kennedy, and we know, well, at least I know, pretty sure, Saran Saran is an innocent man in jail. He never shot Bobby Kennedy. And Thane Eugene Caesar, who did shoot Bobby Kennedy, Robert Kennedy Jr. was about to go see him over a year ago, and Thane Eugene Caesar requested $2,500 to Bobby Kennedy, so that Bobby Kennedy could have the privilege of meeting the man who killed his father. I mean, that's the American dream, right? You assassinate Bobby Kennedy, and you ask for $25,000 for his son to meet you. That is the American dream, how to turn a buck. Anyways, Thane Eugene Caesar died. Now, he was like 78 or something, maybe just died of natural causes. But you wonder if somebody wanted to shut him up, because guess what? Did you know months ago, Sirhan Sirhan was stabbed in prison? He's in stable condition, seriously wounded, like holy smokes. So as soon as Robert Kennedy Jr. sticks his nose into his father's assassination, Sirhan gets stabbed, Thane Eugene Caesar dies. And Thane Eugene Caesar, anybody who's involved in this case, like I did a video you can see just weeks ago with Ole Damegaard on Bobby Kennedy's assassination, even identifying the polka dot girl who ran from the assassination saying, "We got him, we shot him, we shot Robert Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, woo!" Well, her name is Kathy Ainsworth. Since I was a teenager, I always want to know who the polka dot girl was. And the young man with her, she was 26, the young man with her, her lover was 21. His name is Tom Terrence. She was married at the time. Tom Terrence is still alive. So I will give $5 to anybody who get Tom Terrence on the show. I'll even give you like $6.50 if you can get Tom Terrence on the Brian Rush show. Last I heard, he's a fundamentalist Christian living in Israel. So what am I talking about here? I'm talking about second hour. I'll have William F. Buckley on. Now, I'm not really competent at seances. I can't get them from the dead, but this is a restored television video. It's called Firing Line with William F. Buckley Jr., The Warren Report, Fact or Fiction. Holy smokes, folks. Stick around for the second hour. I was just pensive listening to this. I was just on edge because I'm an aficionado of the Kennedy assassinations. Now, my dad said, "You're a bit of a Kennedy nut." And some people close to me since I was a teenager said, "Brian, you're obsessed with the Kennedys." So I don't want to admit an obsession because I'm a Buddhist teacher. I claim to have some spiritual inclinations and such. It's not good for anyone in my position to be obsessed. So I deny it. I deny I'm obsessed. I'm not obsessed. I'm not obsessed. I'm not obsessed with Kennedy's assassination. I'm not obsessed with Bob Kennedy's surrendering the League of one of those people. I'm not. Personally, I've put it to rest somewhat. Both Kennedy assassinations from a Buddhist karmic view, the big picture of Mara in the world, and Lyndon Johnson, and American history in the 1963 coup d'etat. Not only the American government, the entire Western Hemisphere. It was a coup d'etat of planet Earth on November 22nd, 1963. A coup d'etat of this region of the solar system, in my view. But I'm at peace with that. I was not at peace since I was a boy. As a teenager, I was upset about it. I wasted my time reading books on Lee Harvey Oswald. Now I'm 61. I think I've been at peace with this for at least maybe 5 years. I've got to figure it out. I know the motivations and stuff, who did it and stuff. So it's more than just part of my job. I have an interest in this. I'm still interested in it. It's very significant to world history. So stick around for the second hour, folks. But excuse my Tourette syndrome, especially for those watching this video later. But what I want to do before I play this talk, it's kind of nice for you, the listeners. This is actually a live talk. You're so used to Brian Rue playing talks, you don't know, is this guy live or not? Guess what, folks? Today is Tuesday, April 27th, 2021, and it's 14 minutes after 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is a live talk. So I want to talk a bit about my biggest personal issue right now. It's nothing to do with my personal relationships. My personal issue is about the gray alien agenda. I come out just in recent weeks publicly and raised my hand on a video like this saying, "I'm an advocate for the gray alien agenda." This is true, so I'm not joking around here. I feel that the gray aliens are loving and compassionate to humanity. I feel they're trying to uplift humanity. I feel they're trying to benefit humanity and they're trying to benefit themselves, which is what the Buddha recommended, right? I'm a Buddhist, so Buddha recommended that you should try to help others and you should try to help yourself. You should love others, the Buddha taught, and you should love yourself. The Buddha said, the problem people have, they have an urge towards self-annihilation and also the urge towards grasping and greed. So the Buddha advocate you should try to dissolve your urge towards self-annihilation. Meaning the Buddha is saying you shouldn't try to destroy yourself, you should try to help yourself. So certainly from the Buddha's perspective, the Buddha was aware, he was called the knower of the worlds. The Buddha was aware of the idea of aliens and other planets. He also stated that he wasn't going to tell us what he knew. Very famous story of the Buddha's life. He was in a Simsapa forest. And he was there with a bunch of his disciples who had a lot of questions the Buddha didn't appreciate, like metaphysical questions, like, is the universe finite? Is it infinite? You know, this and that. After death, does the Buddha exist or does he not exist? Does he both exist and not exist at the same time? Or does he neither exist and neither not exist? Questions like that cover all four bases. So Buddha comes out of the Simsapa forest with Simsapa leaves in his hands, and he says to the monks, "Monks, where are there more leaves, in the forest or in my hands?" The Buddha liked to ask some easy questions. And the monk said, "Venerable Lord Buddha, there are more leaves in the forest than in the awakened one's hands." And the Buddha said, "Just so. What I know is comparable to all the leaves in the forest floor, but what I teach is comparable to just these leaves in my hand." I'm sure he's talking about the leaves in the trees in the forest floor. So that's more than 136 leaves, right? That's thousands of leaves. But it says, why do I just teach this? Because it's conducive to understanding suffering, you know, the nature of suffering, the cause of suffering, the path in us and the suffering, and enlightenment, nirvana itself. Why do I not teach all that, all those leaves in the forest? Because it's not conducive to understanding suffering and the end of suffering. I mean, it's just a bunch of information, and it's just going to confuse you, maybe blow your mind. And part of what the leaves in the Buddha's hand that he did teach was cosmology, the devas, higher realms. You could even call it other planets, outer space. The Buddha described the universe has a period of contraction and expansion. Devas are higher realm beings like angels. So the Buddha felt it was important for him to teach the 31 planes of existence. That is the leaves in the Buddha's hands. That's not extraneous information in the floor. So it's important from the Buddhist perspective. It's important to the Buddha to teach you about the higher realms. So that's why I'm concerned about the gray alien agenda. I got my Brian Rue mug here if you want to order it. Contact me and you can order it from Vistaprint, as well as Brian Rue t-shirts with my logo on it. You see, the Revolution Radio audience who don't get to see this, I got a nice background here behind me of the city of Vancouver, because I didn't have a chance to put the gray alien background. I have that on my computer for Zoom, but this is Skype, you see. Just so I had the right to know. So the Buddha felt it's important to teach cosmology. So I'm still getting at the story. I haven't even started yet, right? I've been at here for 19 minutes. I haven't even started yet. So now I'll start. My biggest current personal issue this week is what is the relation between the Jewish establishment on the planet today and the gray aliens and the Federation of Planets? I believe that the Federation of Planets must include reptilians, what we call bad aliens and good aliens and bad aliens. Now, for those of us involved in the field of ufology, I've been into it seriously since 2006. No, we generally agree that this is complicated. Nobody understands the whole thing. It's arrogant to say that we know what we're talking about. And we don't know. And that the real truth is nuanced and is not accurate to say that all reptilians are bad aliens. I believe there's good reptilians. I'm certainly the type of person that does abbreviate my speech. I make generalizations and oversimplifications because I feel it is wise to do so. The Buddha said, "Monks, you must use conventional speech, otherwise you will not be understood. So keep things simple." So I do use terms like good aliens and bad aliens, and I deeply in my heart believe that there are good aliens and bad aliens. But what I'm saying is I believe that the real truth is nuanced, and I can 100% guarantee you that I do not understand what is going on with aliens. However, I do have an hypothesis, which I've learned from other people in the field of ufology. I have almost no original ideas. I might have a few original ideas. Maybe I'll express some today. But I want to give you the confidence that even though I've only spent maybe 1,000 to 3,000 hours studying the field of UFOs and aliens since 2006, not to say what I did for the first 46 years prior to that. I know people personally, like Linda Moulton Howe, Richard Dolan, people I've spoken to like that, who spent at least 10,000 hours of their time. They're world-class authorities on the subject. And there's many more I've spoken with. I've interviewed the late Stanton Friedman and others. But that's enough about you. Let's talk about me. What do you think about me? You're expecting me to say, that's enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about you? So why is my biggest, deepest personal issue at this time the relationship to Jewish establishment and gray aliens and reptiles and the such? Well, because since July of 2014, I've been very publicly criticizing the Jewish establishment, Jewish power, yeah. And last week ago, I came out with a public apology here on Revolution Radio called, and you can see the video on BitChute called Brian Rue Apologizes to the Jewish Establishment on Adolf Hitler's 132nd Birthday. Now, I apologize, it's pronounced Adolf Hitler. But did I apologize for everything I've said since July 2014? Well, not yet. No, I didn't do that. What I specifically apologize for is that I am a gray alien advocate. I advocate the agenda of the gray aliens. And yet I believe now from Shirley Hansen's book called The Dual Soul Connection that it's the grays themselves which are now putting pressure on 200 governments of the world to prevent total UFO disclosure, and that they've been doing it since at least 1897 with the crash in Aurora, Texas. That's what I believe. Certainly been doing since 1941 with the crash in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which made the local senator, Harry Truman, powerful and propelled him into the presidency of the United States because he was on the scene at the time. I believe he was involved in the Cape Girardeau, Missouri flying saucer crash with bodies, which is another story. So what I'm talking about is I've apologized to everyone saying I sincerely believe that the Jewish establishment with their hooks in the oil companies did not want planet Earth to have free energy resulting from the back engineered technology of flying saucers going back to 1941 or 1947 Roswell, whatever it was. Because I believe that the American government office currently right now today have had free energy since at least the 1950s, certainly the 1960s. They've got back engineered flying saucers. They currently today have anti-gravity and more exotic technology. So I've been blaming the Jewish establishment, thinking, well, they're keeping the goy down. They're keeping the masses down because they want to keep all these goodies and technology for the Jewish establishment. And they're off planet, as Richard Dolan says. I read his current book here called The Alien Agendas. And other books he's also stated. You have a book called The Secret Space Program, where Richard Olin says, there is a breakaway civilization of human beings on this planet who have such incredible technology. They have a breakaway civilization. They got starships going to other stars. This huge, big civilization of human beings on this planet Earth. We're not talking about humans from other planets. We're talking about like the Rothschild family and such, though I don't think Richard Olin named the Rothschilds. So I thought, yeah. And of course, I know better than Richard Olin. No, I had private conversation with Richard Olin. He never said anything about the Jewish establishment. He actually emailed me, said that's not my view. But I'm saying what I've been wrong about for many years, the mistake I made and the apology I'm making again now, is that all this time, the gray aliens who loved and cared for us felt, you know, humanity can't handle the truth. They really can't. We've got to keep a lid on UFO disclosure. And this is the wisest, most compassionate thing for humanity. It wasn't the Jews keeping a lid on it. It was us. I'm speaking on behalf of the gray aliens because I identify with them. In the sense that I don't believe I've got any of their DNA. I don't believe that I'm a hybrid myself. I believe that I'm an ordinary human being. But I've joined the team, and I'm willing to take a hit for the team and to get be blamed for supporting this team. I am a truly, sincerely, 100% gray alien advocate. So I'm a sectarian. It's like I've chosen a political party, right? And with that particular political party. And if you don't like that political party, well, that, there's a line in the sand between you and me. That's that kind of an attitude. But, of course, I don't have anything against anyone else. If someone doesn't know about the Greys, most people don't care. If they're opposed to the Greys, I'm not upset about that. But I think what's good and decent and honest about me is I'm just honest about it. You know where I stand instead of sitting on the fence or concealing the truth about myself. Because I'm a gray alien advocate, on behalf of the gray aliens, I would say, we, the gray aliens, we're responsible for suppressing UFO disclosure. So, it's probably difficult. I know a fellow, Jeff, who received psychic communication from a gray alien. So in a sense, I can send emails to a gray alien, to gray aliens, and I can get an answer back. So another first announcement on Revolution Radio. Brian Rue claims, and I believe it's true, I can send an email to Jeff. Jeff will contemplate on it. He'll psychically communicate with this gray elder handler. She says, I'm your handler, Jeff. And she can send a telepathic message. Jeff, he just phoned me, what time is it now? He phoned me about 4.5 hours ago, and we just talked for about an hour. And he told me some information he got from his gray elder psychically. I've asked some questions in the past about history and stuff, which he specifically asked the gray elder on my behalf, and he relayed her message to me. So because of that, I conclude that I personally have the ability to send emails to gray aliens. Yes, and I do it through a medium of some kind who is Jeff, a human being. So what's mysterious and marvelous about that is not me, it's Jeff. And I recommend you watch 22.5 hours of videos of Jeff on our YouTube channel. So write this down, folks. The YouTube channel is called Vancouver UFO. And there's a playlist called Jeff. And he's done really good PowerPoint presentations 7 times. So one of his videos is currently unlisted. It has a lot of personal information about his sexual encounters with aliens. So it's only about 19 and a half of us have actually had an opportunity to see this video. It's got 25 hits on it. But I hope Jeff will release this video. Put a lot of heart and effort and time into these PowerPoint presentations. So I feel I haven't told you the thing yet, because I'm afraid maybe I'm hesitant to reveal it. Here's the thing that I haven't said to you yet. I do have some ideas coalescing on my consciousness about the nature of the Jewish establishment with the gray aliens, and I haven't said it publicly. I won't say it all now, but I'm certainly the type of person that picks the moment and says it, right? Since July 24, 2014, I picked the moment and I said what I said about Jewish power, Adolf Hitler, advanced ancient global civilizations and everything else. So now at least I can say this right now. I don't know about the ethical status of the Rothschild Zionist Talmudic international establishment from Lord Jacob Rothschild in the city of London down to the man on the street throughout all of planet Earth encompassing 7.8 billion people. I don't know the status of their moral qualities or their karma. I was more certain about this prior to meeting Jeff in March of 2020. I felt certain then. Now I'm uncertain now. Because of the nuanced nature of reality and the nature of the dimensions above the one that I live in. I live in the third dimension. I mean, I think the majority of humanity lives within a fence. And I got this line from Richard Dolan months ago in one of his videos. He said, you know, we live within a fence. And we're not allowed to go outside of that fence. But there are people. He's referring to the military-industrial establishment, which controls UFO information, and many people whose job it is to suppress us. He's saying these people live outside the fence. They're in touch with aliens. They work with aliens. They go up in and out of space, you know. They live outside of that fence. There's people, you know, in the same city of you who are employed by intelligence, who you meet at the grocery store, who live outside of that fence. In my view, and in Richard Dolan's view, Richard Dolan and I agree on that. So, I feel that I actually go outside that fence personally, because in April of 1994, I was initiated into higher-up practices of Shambhala International. Their world centers in Halifax, Canada, Nova Scotia. The website is called Shambhala.org. I'm thankful to them. So because of them, I'm maybe a D-plus channeler, and I have a channeling practice for many years. So I've had a relationship with the higher realms. But it's more through studying books and watching videos and meeting personally people like Jeff that I've learned more about the gray aliens, their agenda, their culture, their society, and their truly compassionate disposition towards all beings. Like they're like beyond Buddhist monks. Like they're, I feel that they're really spiritually evolved. They use the technology for the spiritual evolution. They have a spiritual hierarchy, as is recommended in Buddhism. Like the Buddha said, I'm top of the spiritual hierarchy, guys. Like, I'm a fully enlightened Buddha. You're not, right? Even if you're fully enlightened, you're just an arhant. I'm a Buddha, right? So in Buddhism, we believe in a hierarchical spiritual environment. Now, I like pressing people buttons because of equality, right? Since the Jewish-inspired communist equality in 1848. A lot of people just oppose the whole idea of hierarchy, especially the rugged individualist American libertarian, right? But as my dear friend, Venerable Panabasa, we've done 200 videos together on the playlist called Buddhist Monk Truth. He said, big understatement, he said, there is no equality in the 31 planes of existence. Just an aside on Venerable Panabasa, we did a video last night, and he's disrobing as a monk. He's quitting as a monk. We did an hour, 37-minute explanation last night. I'm going to release that video in the days to come. And he's got a girlfriend in South Carolina. He's going to be moving there, and I wish him well. And we're going to continue making videos together, so you can stay tuned for that story. But Venerable Panabasa has been quite a spiritual advisor to me, as a senior monk. He's got 30 years seniority as a monk. So getting back to my big revelation, I don't understand the relationship between the good gray aliens and their agenda, the reptilians, some of which are, I think, hostile, and the international Jewish establishment, and then below that, the Masons and every single other power structure on planet Earth. I don't get it. I have an hypothesis. Jeff told me there's really no good, no bad, in the sense that the reptilians, they're just protecting their interests. He said it's like if you're mining a mountainside, you know, because you want to get ore and metals, you want to get metals. The animals that live in the ground, the insects, think you're the enemy. You're devil incarnate. And the animals that live on the mountainside will say, well, you're just Satan. You're the devil. You're the enemy. You're bad, right? But to other human beings, you're just protecting your interests. You pay your taxes. You employ people. They might think you're good if you're a mining company. So I think Jeff's point is it's nothing personal, right? And I've seen Carrie Cassidy's 9 or 10 hours of videos with Ashiana Dean from 2010. Look up Ashiana Dean if you can spell Ashiana. And she says a very big wide view. Of course, I don't know if it's all true, but she's saying reptilians are kind of consuming planet Earth. Or they're, you know, they're not treating us well because they want to use planet Earth in this galaxy to use some type of a portal to get through to a planet in another galaxy. And they, she said, it's nothing personal. You know, whether the reptilians kill billions of people or not, it's not nothing personal. They're just protecting their interests. It's like Jeff said, I'm not specifically talking about reptilians, and neither was he, but, you know, some types of aliens, they might just be protecting their interests. To us, it might seem, you know, oh, they're doing these terrible things. But, you know, it's hard to judge, and I think you'd be wise, be really careful and not judge, because certainly I think the Great Alien Abduction Program is wholesome and good because they're trying to upgrade us consciously and spiritually and also genetically. So as you can see in my website at brianrood.ca with my top four priorities, number one, I say in the 1,000-plus-year plan of the gray aliens, they want planet Earth to result in a hybrid between the gray aliens and Homo sapiens sapiens, what we know today to be Homo sapiens sapiens. So it'd be better off if we were hybrids because they'd be more spiritual, more of a collective thinking, a telepathic. So you don't have to worry about what people are thinking behind your back, whether they're secretly planning to stab you in the back or not, because everything's kind of open telepathically. A much better society than we have to now. And let's face it, folks, in the last century, since World War I, 1941, humanity has failed in terms of our spiritual growth and our compassion. So personally, I vote for the gray alien agenda because I think it's going to create a more spiritual humanity. And I'm sure a lot of people jump on the bandwagon and agree with me. Oh, yeah, right, Brian. Let's be like gray aliens and let's just give up our appearance and let's all become hybrids. Let's get rid of the United States of America, kind of, and let's just be this kind of, you know, hybrid society. We're all with you, Brian. I'm sure there's people who say that. I'm sure there's probably a majority, meaning 51% or more, would disagree with that. So, as usual, I picked a lifestyle and a whole view and a party, which is in a minority. I've been doing that all my life. I became a Buddhist, right? That's kind of small. Then within Tibetan Buddhism, I switched to Theravada Buddhism, which is smaller in the West. And look what I've done with the Brian Rush Show, but that's enough about me. Let's talk about you. So I think the Jewish people and the Jewish establishment, Jewish history, is not as bad as I thought it was. I'm not saying I was wrong about everything I said since July 2014. I don't like things like the Gulag in the Soviet Union with millions of people killed. I still think that was wrong. So again, I'd have to go through my last 1,027 videos and say, yeah, I still agree with that. Yeah, I still agree with this. I agree with this. Like, oh, no, I changed my mind about that. But my 2,700 videos since October 2011, it's kind of like a diary. I don't know where this is leading, but I think in the future it's going to lead to unity consciousness between the Nazis and the Jews. We're all going to come together and hold hands and big group hug. We're going to have unity consciousness. I really, truly feel this is the direction I personally am going. So I've got something to please everyone and something to offend everyone. I look at the comments underneath my videos. When I talked about this stuff, you see one comment saying, one of my longtime commentators saying, fuck you, Brian. I can see these pro-Hitler, anti-Jew people are kind of disappointed with me. And many people literally think I'm losing my sanity talking about aliens, UFOs, and gray aliens. But my health is good, as long as the medical authorities in the city of Vancouver feel that I'm competent enough. I'm not worried about someone coming to my door and taking me to a hospital. And my My personal behavior is conservative. I'm a conservative person. I dress conservatively. Today I was walking down the Arbutus Greenway in Kitsilano, Vancouver, chatting with these women with a dog. There's a goose there by himself, which is one lady's feeding and giving water to, because the goose spouse is probably in the bushes laying the eggs. So I behave like a really normal guy. So I feel that I'm protected by the free speech laws in Canada, and I'm becoming less controversial and more weird and more strange. So I'll be fine. So I'm just expressing my doubt now on Revolution Radio. I've been talking 40 minutes here. Pretty good for a live show. I'm expressing my doubts about to what extent the Jewish establishment have been doing wrongs for the last three centuries, particularly since World War I. I believe they've done some wrongs, but now I'm just in a don't know space. But I'm open to finding the truth, and truth is certainly is research. You can send me information, but I think a lot of learning comes from not from studying, but just from insight, personal insight. You know, you contemplate on something, and bang, you get insight, or you have a download or a channel or something. I prefer learning that way or getting information that way. So that's my spontaneous, real fresh talk for now. Now I'm going to play some of my pre-recorded talks. The first one is, I think it's maybe it's enough time before the break, maybe not fully. So this talk is it's the latest top video today on the Brian Rue BitChute channel. And also tell you, my website is brianrue.ca. My ThuleSociety.com website has been down for 3 weeks, but James Roos, my editor-in-chief, and I are working on that. We expect it to be up today or tomorrow. Also, check out the Truth and Justice for German Society.com website with our president, Monica Schaefer. I've got a YouTube channel with about 13 videos on it called Brian Rue. And then bet you with 2,727 videos. So here we go, folks. And I'll do the share screen on Skype. It's called Invitation for You to Debate Canada's Highest Standard of Truth. So now I'm doing the share screen feature on Skype. And I will now play this for you. Ta-da! See, BitChute is a bit slow to start with sometimes. In fact, it's slow right now. It's not playing. But I had every contingency plan. I knew this might happen. Because of my gifts with live radio, I can keep the conversation going. I'm just fiddling with BitChute here to try to get it. I'm trying to coax it to go here. So I recorded this on Sunday night. I was out in the countryside with my girlfriend and another couple, and at 11:40 at night, I was inspired to record this. I was getting a bit sleepy before I went to bed. I wanted to make a statement, which is only like 20 minutes long. So I'm trying this again. Let's see if it comes up now. Yes, it's working. Here we go, folks. This is it. This is April the 25th, 2021. On this episode of the Brian Rue Show, I don't think it's really important to show you this Braun electric razor I bought yesterday at London Drugs for $70. Barry taught me I get a $25, $30 one there. But when I was shopping, I saw that Jones is looking at the most expensive one. It's important for me to keep up razor Jones I bought yesterday most at London Drugs one. For And yesterday, I think I get a 20 Western $30. I cut my own hair. When I was shopping, I saw that Jones is looking at the most expensive one. It's important for me to keep up razor I bought yesterday. I want to kind of shortcut, but yesterday, I get a 20 Western $30.
Like, these things are going my own hair. Back
and you got to expand.
And I was shopping, I saw the Joneses looking at the most expensive ones. Like, part good for me to keep up razor. I bought yesterday.
Most Leonard Jones. Fort Langley behind me.
Yesterday,
surprised next to
the other.
I got $30 from any of my
videos. These things are going my own.
Thousand hours of volunteer work over the past almost 4 years. We went out there with her and her husband. And we had a picnic out in the country. Then we went to this retreat center, did this singing bowl meditation, which was really quite good, but that's not what this video is about. We had lunch, went out for dessert and tea later. So that's what this video is about. Dessert and tea? No. Dan picked the right moment. You know, she confronted me for about 30 or 40 minutes about the gray aliens. Said, come on, Brian. She didn't agree with me about the gray aliens because I'm pro gray aliens. So we had this whole discussion. I don't need to repeat the, you know, the whole discussion. It was friendly and it ended friendly. We drove back home and everything's fine that way. This is next in a series of the new kind of spontaneous videos. I get in the right space of mind and realize, you know, for the past many decades, I get a strong feeling or clear idea. And if I had my video camera ready, man, I could have made so many good talks throughout my life, but I didn't have the video camera ready. But now, because of the technology of all these great white men out there who designed all the software, these unsung heroes who made this talk possible, I got Zoom in my bedroom. My roommate's got the computer on in the living room. No, and I don't think it comes up on the mic, and it's fine. And I got a picture of Fort Langley. We had lunch in Fort Langley, right around here. None of these particular buildings, but it's a genuine Fort Langley. It's about a 1 hour drive east of Vancouver. I think it was like the original capital of British Columbia, like 2 centuries ago. It was just a fort. What I want to talk about is my top four priorities, which I will show you here on my website. And I didn't make much in our conversation about me being the highest standard of truth in Canada, da-da-da-da. It's really about the top four priorities, which I regard as the highest standard of truth. And I'm getting lonely at the top here. I walk the dark alleys of the city of Vancouver at night, yearning for a worthy opponent. Oh, no one's taking me on. So I'm asking you, I mean, if you're Canadian, if you're one of the 37 million, some 100,000 Canadians, I challenge you to challenge me for my title as highest standard of truth in cannabis. Not so much about me and my ego, but are my four top priorities generally the four most important issues for all of mankind, humankind? So I am inviting all of you 7.8 billion people in the world to come one at a time and challenge me with your real name and real face on video about these truths, because this is very important and profound. I'm saying these are the four most important truths for every last man, woman, child, and embryo in the world. And wouldn't it be nice if someone could challenge me and prove that I'm wrong so that I could improve my knowledge, right? So let me show you the four top priorities for the Brian Roux Show. Okay, go to my website, link below this video. It's brianroux.ca. Hit the home button, and this is it. So these are what I believe to be the most important issues facing all mankind. So I have the right to revise it if I want. So something's very important, say in a religion, you repeat it again and again. So here we go, Brian's top priorities for humanity. Last time I showed this, it was a bit fuzzy. I hope it's a bit clearer this time. So here we go. Number one, follow the great alien agenda for planet Earth with their 1,000 plus year process. Aspire for humanity to transform into human gray hybrids and join a good federation of planets as the absolute goal for the new humans on Earth. Full government UFO disclosure is wrong, and I'm completely opposed to it. The world can't handle the truth. The general population cannot be trusted. The exotic technology of flying saucers, free energy, anti-gravity, etc. This long-standing policy must continue at all costs. Number two, the truth about globalist international Jewish power working for aliens, and this is mysterious. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler. The world should admit that we were wrong about Hitler, teach the true history,
make reparations to the German people, and learn from Hitler's wholesome example. Number four, the truth about ancient events, global civilizations. Give us our true history to illuminate our culture, give us its advances in knowledge, but not advances in technology, is number one above.
Oh, folks, my BitChute channel temporarily stopped, but I'm right on the ball. Was it something I said? So I'm going through my top four priorities. If you want to follow along, if you got a computer, go to brianrood.ca, hit the home button. I assume this is just BitChute getting stuck. So I'm at minute 624. So I'll fiddle with that. If that doesn't work, you can always deal with me. I can talk. Or it can be the other me talking. Or I can play another one. I will fiddle. I'm just going to keep fiddling with my BitChute here. Now the line's moving a bit. So if I give it a few seconds, it might just come on. And I actually changed this most important page on my whole website. It's the most important page. And I changed it radically about a week ago. I did a 180 degree with my views on total disclosure of UFO information. So I try to have everything condensed down. So in one page, you can read Brian Rue's top four priorities for everyone in the world, not just myself. This shows my values, my judgment, my conclusion, my hypothesis, synopsis of the state of humanity, where we're at now, where we should be going. In four straightforward points written in plain English. So in a way you can say it's a summation of my 61 years of training, knowledge, and wisdom in terms of what do we do? Because one problem we have in the truth movement is 136 people have 237 opinions about what we should do. And one of the biggest fundamental problems you might be aware of is we got no unity, no collectivism, no group think about what we should do. And the problem with individuals is that they're selfish. Individuals are selfish. They think they should be the leader and they have their ideas. So the current state is quite poor about us doing anything to help the world. So it's still stuck. So what I'm going to do is following a principle my mother taught me when I was a little boy in the 1960s. Says, Brian, when your computer's stuck, all you do, Brian, is turn it off and turn it on again. So I'm going back to the same talk. I turned off BitChute. Now I'm going to turn it back on and go to the same 6 minutes, 24 seconds, and nothing's happening. And it's about 3 minutes of station break. So I'll give up on that talk. I did promise you the second hour to play William F. Buckley with Mark Lane, and that's 48 minutes long, so it's going to take pretty much the whole hour. So I'll see if I can play that right now to get it started. Okay, I'm turning that on now, folks. It's called The Firing Line with William F. Buckley Jr. So I got that playing now, and nothing. It's not starting. Wait, it is starting. Yay, it's on now, folks. So I'll play this for the next 3 minutes. Here we go. Right now, there's a silent showing the Hoover Libraries and Hoover Institution in Stanford, California have given permission to play this. It says, this television program was preserved from archival videotape. Videotape was clean, preserved, and treatment, da-da-da-da. Here it is, The Firing Line with William F. Buckley, Jr.
Firing Line with William F. Buckley, Jr. Tonight's guest, Mark Lane. Our topic, The Warren Report.
Da-da-da-da.
Fact Here or it is. Fiction, Mr. Buckley.
Buckley, Jr.
Mark Lane is the doctor. He is. identifying himself gladly with causes worthy, controversial, and unworthy. He has been a special favorite of the left liberal community in New York City, which he greatly pleased by his myriad activities, ranging from the organization of rent strikes, opposition to bomb shelter programs, involvement in legal and civil rights groups, irrespective of government claims that they were communist infiltrated. He was, in short, a hero in important circles in New York well before the assassination of President Kennedy by whoever assassinated President Kennedy. Not, we must assume, from Mr. Lane, Harvey Lee Oswald. Mr. Lane is a skillful lawyer and has written a best-selling book called Rush to Judgment. The publishers maintain that this book has, quote, changed history, that single-handedly Mr. Lane has discredited the Warren Report. We are not here to discuss the minutiae of the controversies raised by the Warren Commission and its critics for the simple reason that it is impractical to do so. Rather, we will treat more general questions. I'd like to begin by asking Mr. Lane this. It is widely alleged...
Okay, folks, we're coming up to a break. So remember, Revolution Radio is totally listener-supported. Please send in your donations. Keep us on the air. Keep thriving. You can go to our website. There's a credit card, snail mail, Patreon, at Revolution Radio, revolution.radio, or freedomslips.com. Okay, folks, we'll be right back after the break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
The little honey on the lone highway.
left me for another on a lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to Revolution Radio on Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. This is the Brian Roux Show, coming to you from beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, rated as one of the top five cities in the world to live in. So this is hour two. In the first hour, I actually gave a live talk for 40 minutes, which is probably the first time I've done that since 2018. I usually play my recent talks. I've been inspired to do this recently because of some personal changes in my life. I've moved my main computer from the living room to my bedroom so as not to disturb my roommate, so he can have fun in the living room, even be playing games on his computer. So now that I'm in my own space, I'm now better at generating that gut feeling that wells up from my inner channel, and I speak my heart more right into soliloquy videos, which you can see on my BitChute channel, even on my YouTube channel, which is called Brian Roux, if you can spell R-U-H-E, which is a German word for stillness, quiet and quiet. If you Google my name, you'll get 13 and a half pages on Brian Roux. Except there's this quite successful business owner and engineer in Germany, who's a generation younger than me, named Brian Roux. I emailed him, but he never got back to me. I don't know how he feels about how I've affected his reputation. I shouldn't be cruel to another Brian Roux, I don't know. So the first hour, I talked a bit, and I played just 6 minutes and 26 seconds of my talk called Invitation for You to Debate Canada's Highest Standard of Truth, which is me, but bet you got stuck. So I switched to plan B because, you know, us guys on live radio, man, we got so much experience. We can deal with any emergency, trouble, earthquakes, invasions from outer space, whatever. Bet you got stuck. So I switched to my other bet you video, which is not mine. This is a video, at least when I was 6 years old, just before my seventh birthday. I think it was December 1st, 1966. It's called Firing Line with William F. Buckley Jr., The Warren Report, Fact or Fiction. William F. Buckley, I've been watching him in recent years. My feeling, well, he's part of the controlled media establishment. And below this video in the description, you see the recent email I got days ago from Elizabeth Cardo, the widow of the wealthy Willis Cardo, of the legendary Willis Cardo. I've really got some slips here. I don't want to say Freudian slips because I don't want to give any credit to Freud, but I make lots of slips. I'm sure you could crawl up my behind with a microscope and totally figure me out just from my slips. So anyways, Elizabeth Cardo, she's almost 80, and she was close friends with Mark Lane. And she's a friend of mine for the last few years. We've talked countless times. She just emailed me the other day. She even wants to send in a donation, so you should donate to Revolution Radio. Remember, Revolution Radio is totally listener-supported. All of us are volunteers. all of us hosts are volunteers, the staff, people work for the station art. So please do send in your donations. It's a worthy cause, and for you, good karma for you. So in the first hour, I just played the first 3 minutes of this. I'll continue. I just want to comment on William F. Buckley. I kind of assume, well, he's an adversary, right? He's part of mainstream media. Yeah, he's conservative, yeah, but... In the email from Elizabeth Cardo just days ago, which you can read, I have in the description of this video, she says, Mark Lane met with the fool, Buckley, the fool, and she said money and his Jewish friends, you know, got to him, or compromised him when he really became more famous and his magazine got published. She said he had to sell his soul to the devil. But this is the very earliest days in 1966. I think this is, might have been the year he started. This is episode 39. I don't know, maybe it started earlier than that. But I must admit, I have some fondness for William F. Buckley Jr. He's obviously an intelligent man. In this talk, you'll listen to, if I shut up so you can listen to it, he's basically saying to Mark Lane, look, you've got this thesis that maybe even Lyndon Johnson was involved in the assassination. But, you know, there's this lazy acceptance by the American people. I mean, you sound so smart and you've got some really good information here and you've researched and it's, and he's saying, you don't have lazy acceptance, Mark Lane, not you. You worked hard, but your American people, you know, 2/3 of them currently now, December 1966 now, he's saying, 2/3 of American people doubt the Warren Commission. They want to know who killed the president. But me, William F. Buckley, my concern about you, Mark Lane, you're creating this kind of lazy acceptance amongst American people that might turn against President Lyndon Johnson that could seriously affect his career, you know? So I'm concerned about that. So on the one hand, William F. Buckley could be covering for International Jewish Ash, which is responsible for Kennedy's assassination because they wanted the atomic bomb. But now I will reveal for the first time in history, I will reveal on Revolution Radio that I suspect the gray aliens were behind the assassination of President Kennedy because President Kennedy, I suspect, instructed the CIA to turn over information about UFOs and aliens to the White House. CIA was concerned that President Kennedy was going to reveal the truth about aliens. The gray aliens, since Eisenhower in 1954, since before that, they decided, no, we do not want full disclosure. We must stop this at all costs. We can't do that. It's too upsetting to humanity. And we are so compassionate to humanity. We're the gray aliens. We know better than you. We're like mother, we're like father, we have compassion. You know, people can't handle the truth. Like Jack Nicholson said in that movie, you can't take the truth, you can't handle it. So out of their compassion for the world, the gray aliens assassinated President Kennedy, and President Lyndon Johnson did the noble and correct and kind and compassionate thing for the world by preventing UFO disclosure. I can't believe the words came out of my mouth, man. I said it publicly. Now, do I believe what I just said? The answer is I know that I'm uncertain about the truth of that, and I just don't know the truth of that. But it is an hypothesis I'm willing to entertain, and I am entertaining that hypothesis. I certainly believe in my heart of hearts that it's possible that the great aliens enforce their agenda out of compassion for the world by assassinating President Kennedy. I wish a gray just popped in the White House and just explained to President Kennedy, look, if you do that, we're going to blow your head off. You understand? Don't do that. No, that didn't happen. So I'm getting to some far out stuff here, but it's already 10 minutes after the hour, and this is a 48-minute talk. I played 3 minutes so far, so I will carry on with William F. Buckley. I'm Mark Lane, folks. So now I'm going to do the share sound, share screen, and here we go.
pledge that sinister forces who have a vested interest in suppressing the real truth as to the identity of the assassin have been here and there killing off crucial people, former strippers at Ruby's Joint in Dallas, a truck driver, roommates of friends of Oswald, that kind of thing. How come if you were the man who has changed history, these forces haven't bumped you off, Mr. Lane?
Well, I think, fortunately, we haven't come to that. I would like to comment, if I may, upon portions of your introduction. It is not just liberals and leftists who cannot accept the Warren Commission report. Of course, I think the very best review and most favorable review, which my book received, was in your publication, The National Review.
I was talking about your pre-Kennedy reputation by way of background.
Before the assassination.
Yes, sir.
When I was elected to the
state
legislature.
There was an assassination, wasn't there?
Yes, when I was elected, there's no question about that. When I was elected to the state legislature with the endorsement and support of President Kennedy, that's the left liberal approach you're talking about. In terms of the
Kennedy
assassination,
reputation.
The Warren report, of course, the Lou Harris poll shows now that 2/3 of the American people indicate that they cannot accept its conclusions. So I think that it's not even an unpopular cause with which I'm associated any longer. And regarding the earlier comments you made, I think the best way to respond to them is probably with the opening line of your book, which I'm afraid I may butcher because I'll just paraphrase it. But it was something like, when you are a controversialist, you can either go mad or ignore genuinely unjust criticism. And I prefer, as you do, the latter course.
Well, I hope there hasn't been any genuinely unjust criticism yet on this show. It is, I think, a matter of some importance, as far as the American thinking community is concerned, to investigate motives, to investigate one's general attitude towards the events in Dallas. For instance, Harrison Salisbury of the New York Times, who has himself been accused of being much too liberal.
Who accused him of that?
Harrison me.
Oh.
has said that Ms. Mark Lane, quotes, is a New York attorney who has made a career of insinuating that Mr. Kennedy was the victim of a right-wing plot. Yeah.
Now, what I mean by unjust criticism is to take that early comment, which he wrote when he did the introduction to the Warren Report, and to ignore his present statement, where he states now, and although the New York Times will not tell you this, although he's the associate managing editor, in the recent review on The Progressive, he's indicated that he finds much substance in my charges. And in a recent Canadian Broadcasting Company broadcast, he said if he were asked again, he would not do the introduction to the Warren Report because he doesn't have sufficient confidence in it.
Well, that I was not aware of. What I'm trying to see, simply to place into perspective, is where you figure in terms of the general criticism of the report. Would this be fair or not fair to say, Mr. Lane, since we are going to strike out for justice?
Excellent.
That certain people, ever since the assassination, both on the left and on the right, have been highly dissatisfied by the findings of the Warren Commission, highly dissatisfied because it didn't fit their ideological predisposition. Certain members of the right, for instance, are terribly anxious to find out that somebody in the Kremlin pushed a button and that Oswald was immediately energized, raised his rifle, and pulled the trigger. You consider this naive, I assume. But by the same token, we have, for instance, Professor H. Stuart Hughes, shortly after the assassination, writing in The Nation magazine, what most of us at first thought was that the crime had been committed by a Southern racist. Indeed, if we look deeply into our souls, I think many of us will recognize that we were disappointed to learn that such was not the case. Now,
I think it's true that those on the right tend to would like to believe that those on the left were involved in a conspiratorial way.
Yes.
And those on the left have the same feeling about those on the right.
Yes, but your reputation has been as a left liberal within the spectrum of New York politics, so that people who first look into your association with this particular venture might unjustly, I hasten to add, I think of you as somebody who is trying to rescue Oswald as the putative killer.
But since
I don't
even say in my
book... Because Oswald was communist.
Well, since I don't even say in my book that Oswald was innocent, of course, one cannot really
yes,
accuse
right.
me of that motive.
Yes, but this is the effect of your book, isn't it?
No. I think my book shows quite conclusively that shots came from at least two directions and at the law. Conspiracy is nothing more course, than two or more persons acting in concert to effect an illegal end. So the book says there was a conspiracy to kill the president.
So both our host and our guest are speaking softly so far, but I'm sure a few big sticks will be raised before the end of this hour. We'll continue with Firing Line in just a moment.
Mr. Lane, is it or is it not fair then to say that your book does not go further than to say that the Warren Commission didn't take all of the evidence into account, but by no means goes so far as to say that Oswald is exonerated on the basis of your reading of the findings?
Well, it goes beyond, I think, the former, and not quite as far as the latter. I think the book states quite clearly that the Warren Report is a fraudulent document, not merely that they did not take sufficient evidence into consideration, but they distorted evidence, they misused evidence, and what's worse, I think they oversimplified evidence.
Well, let me ask you then this so I can understand you completely. Assuming per impossibile that Oswald would arise up from the dead, come up here and say, Mr. Lane, I did fire the fatal shot, this would not invalidate your book in any way, would it?
Well, I don't think he could have fired the fatal shot because that shot came from the right front.
But now, if you said I fired one of the shots.
Yes, that certainly is a possibility. The mere fact that the Warren Commission was totally unable to prove that doesn't mean that it's not true. Yeah.
Now, is it or is it not, would you not agree that even though this was a wild, desperate crime, pretty much in the category of the criminal who killed McKinley, even though we are prepared to say that there is no reason to assume that Oswald got orders from the communist apparatus, that nevertheless there was a very considerable record of Oswald's sympathy with the communists, which for some reason isn't stressed in your book. I say for some reason, you might have simply thought it methodologically irrelevant.
I think that the political commitments of those who, in terms of the evidence, are proven to be nothing more than spectators, I think that's quite irrelevant to a determination as to where the shots came from.
Yeah, we're not rushing up to say that Oswald was a spectator, are we? I thought that you said that it would not surprise you if, in fact, he pulled one of the...
Not invalidate my book. It would surprise me because I think there's no evidence to show that. I take really the same position Alfredo Scobie, one of the lawyers for the Warren Commission, takes. And that is, had Oswald lived, he could not have been proven guilty had he faced trial based upon the evidence the commission was able to secure.
And of course, Warren says that he was a practicing district attorney for 10 or 12 years and that he could have gotten a conviction in 48 hours with the evidence.
Yes,
you simply disagree with him professionally.
That's nonsense. It would take longer than that to pick a jury,
Do you think Warren should be impeached?
I don't think he should be impeached. I think his report should be impeached.
Well, but we certainly don't want incompetent chief justices around, do we?
Well, we're used to those. We've had them for many years.
But this is the first one you would not impeach.
No, I would not impeach any of them. I don't know of any of the chief justices who should be impeached.
Uh-huh. But you would think that...
I think mere incompetence is not a reason to disqualify a judge. We'd have an empty bench.
Yeah, yeah. So you take a rather severe view about the competence of our Supreme Court justices. So do I, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
Yeah. I guess you wanted to retreat from your position. Well,
You see, that goes back really to your early position. My position is not arrived at either by my political view or your political view. And I think that the integrity of my book depends not upon my own political bias, and of course I have several of them, many of them, but upon the 5,000 citations and references to the Warren Commission's own evidence, which mark the book from the beginning to the end. Either they're in context or they're not, either they're accurate or not. I suggest that they're accurate, and they've not yet been proven by any of the 2,000 reviewers to be inaccurate or out of context so far.
Well, now, you just finished quoting a lawyer, Mr. Scobie, that I never heard about. Suppose I quote one that maybe you've never heard about.
All right.
He's with the UCLA Law School.
Oh, yes, I know.
And he says, Lane misstated or distorted the record in 15 instances. Lane has threatened to sue. He hasn't. Is that just because you're otherwise engaged, or what?
I am going to sue Wesley Liebler for libel, no question about it. He's clearly pathologically committed to the commission's case. It's an unfortunate matter, but it's a personal matter, and he has to deal with that with those in another discipline.
How would you feel about people who said the reverse about you, that you're pathologically committed to its opposite?
I would say they're in error.
Uh-huh.
That's that unjust criticism that you made reference to in your first sentence.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you say that there really isn't sufficient evidence to incriminate Oswald, is it or is it not true that it is conceded the gun was sent to Oswald. It is conceded.
It's conceded by the Warren Commission, yes.
And the post office. And
well,
the,
not really. The, see, the post office regulations would prohibit the post office regulations would prohibit the reception of that rifle by Oswald since it was addressed to A. Hiddell. The commission got around that by accepting false testimony from one of the postal inspectors, which was completely contrary to the regulations.
Well, but the law prohibits a lot of things. For instance, the bug conversations that you had with some of your pet witnesses. Nevertheless, those bug conversations continued, right? That which the law prohibits doesn't nevertheless not get done. After all, the law prohibits the assassination of presidents.
And yes, and we know the president was assassinated. We know also that when you deal with a violation of the regulations of the post office, which regulations would prohibit the rifle from reaching Oswald since it was sent to someone named Hiddell, that the way to handle that is just as you have, to say that the regulations prohibit this, but a mistake was made. Mm-hmm. The way the commission did it was through this oversimplification that I made reference to. They accepted testimony falsely as to what the regulations are. That's true. It may be.
Why?
To show that Oswald was the lone assassin, mm-hmm. which was the commission's preconception at the very outset.
Why?
I think we have to go back to that period of November 22nd, 63, and the trauma that was in our country, which was compounded by the murder of the police, by the murder of the alleged assassin while he was being protected by some 70 police officers and various FBI agents and Secret Service agents. He was shot to death by an old, intimate, and corrupt friend of the Dallas Police Force, Jack Ruby. And that added further to the trauma in the country. And there was only one way, as Mr. Rankin, counsel for the commission, said, to meet his commitment. He said the commitment of the commission was to reassure the American people. How could they do it? By Mr. Hoover saying, well, ladies and gentlemen of America, the assassins of your president have escaped. They're walking the streets of your cities tonight. Sorry about that. It was the midst of the greatest security precautions ever taken, but next time we'll try to do better. The very least, people would have demanded the retirement of Mr. Hoover, which would have been certainly one valuable asset, I think, byproduct of the terrible event.
Oh, ho, ho, that was hit and run.
They
wouldn't allow that in court, would they?
What's that? Mm-hmm. Oh, we're not in
your
court.
Your hit and run attack on Mr. Hoover.
Well, shall we slow down? No. I'd be happy to discuss it in greater detail.
No, don't bother. We're not here to discuss Mr. Hoover's credentials. I think they're taken for granted, at least
just
on the show.
Just Mr. Warren's, right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, sure, Mr. Warren, since you most specifically accuse him of presiding over a whitewash or a kangaroo court or whatever you want to talk about. Now, in the course of approaching the problem the way you did, aren't you really asking the question, what kind of investigation is absolutely necessary to establish that which is commonly regarded as a certitude? For instance, suppose one would decide at this moment to convene a commission to establish the innocence of Dreyfus. It might in fact be hard to do. But isn't the certitude of the innocence of Dreyfus a part of your sort of natural equipment? Aren't you willing to come to historical terms with that data?
Well, the French government, which originally said he was guilty, reversed itself after Esterhazy had confessed that he was guilty.
Yes, but there are a lot of Margolins around, you know, who make the same objections to the French government's action in the case of Dreyfus, as you were
But the man who was guilty confessed and said that Dreyfus was in no way involved.
Well, you wouldn't have had that. That could have taken you half a chapter to have handled a confession by Oswald, wouldn't it?
No, not Dreyfus. Pressure.
You said all kinds of things about witnesses.
Are you suggesting that Dreyfus was guilty? I don't know.
No, I'm simply saying that as much of a case can be made for the innocence of Dreyfus as for the innocence of Oswald.
And they may both have been innocent.
Your techniques,
yes,
which are highly ingenious, let me put it another way. If you're willing to believe, I think, that either a combination of ruthlessness or some combination of ruthlessness, cynicism, and sloth committed J. Edgar Hoover and Earl Warren and seven or eight distinguished Americans appointed by the president with the tacit acquiescence of Robert Kennedy and a bunch of hardworking professional lawyers and investigators to come up with a verdict that was palpably indefensible. Then, if you're willing to accept that assumption, it becomes simply a matter of legal ingenuity, and you're extremely ingenious to contrive an extremely interesting case to go ahead and prove your assumption. So methodologically, aren't you as much at error?
Well, I think if you adopt that approach, you say there is no truth, we can never discover what has ever happened. Yeah. I don't believe that that's so. I think we can. I think there are mechanisms developed so that we can. I think the American judicial system is a sound one. Cross-examination, open and public hearings, the right to counsel for the accused. I think these things tend to assist a determination of the truth.
I'm glad you
and
used
all
the word
of these,
tend, yeah,
yes.
Because we know about an awful lot of innocent people who are convicted and guilty people who are let
go. Just think of how many innocent people would have been convicted if they didn't have those protections. The fact is the Warren Commission made none of those protections available. You know what they did? They took testimony. They've never published the transcripts of the testimony. That's locked up by order of your president for 75 years.
Yours too, by
yes.
the way. Yes. You voted for him, didn't you?
No, I did not vote for him, as a matter of fact. Until September 2039 is when we can, the time must pass until we can examine that. What the commission did was to publish a printed version, but in volume one of the reports, the commission states that it reserved the right to edit the testimony, to edit the transcript, to improve the accuracy and the clarity of the witness's statement. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that frighten you a little bit about that power?
No more so than that I don't have access to the notes that went into your book. I'm sure that every time you bumped into a witness who said, yes, Mr. Lane, I saw him and he was Oswald, he very likely didn't figure prominently in your book.
You're saying
because you are an advocate. You are an advocate.
Is the Warren Commission
reserving rights? May I reserve the right to break in here and say we'll continue with firing line in just a moment?
Well, Mr. Lane, I gather that the burden of your charge is that evidence that the Warren Committee secreted away, the loose notes, the notebooks and so on, were it publicly accessible, tend to undermine the Warren Commission's case. Otherwise, would it not simply be a perfectly matter-of-fact and conventional way of exercising editorial judgment? For instance, I find it impossible to read everything that Ruby said in his own interview with the Warren Commission investigators, simply on the grounds of its inherent unintelligibility. Yeah. Now, don't they have some sort of a right to exercise editorial judgment, assuming that we trust their integrity?
I'm surprised you asked that question, because you know that can never be done in a trial, in any court. No judge edits the testimony and then presents it to the jury or to the public. And in this, our most important case, the jury was the American people, I think. And we have the right to look at the unintelligible statements made by Mr. Ruby and the unintelligible questions asked by Chief Justice Warren as well. I think that that's one of our basic rights in a democratic society, which
yes,
we have, right?
Yes, well, I think it may be a basic right which is in and of itself an interesting question. It's not necessarily an interesting question to ask whether or not one must suppose from the fact that certain of the evidence, let's say CIA reports from Havana to Washington, it's not necessarily an interesting question to ask whether or not access to those is indispensable to the making of a responsible judgment.
Oh, I don't think that secret material of that nature should be revealed, but that's not the problem. We have the photographs and the x-rays of the president's body, which would resolve the classic question in the case very likely, the origin of the shots. Now, President Johnson was asked at a recent press conference by Mr. Spivak why it was that the Warren Commission never examined those invaluable documents and why no non-governmental person can now look at them. And President Johnson replied that they were available to the commission. I think that didn't answer the question, the first portion. And secondly, he said, we wouldn't want them paraded around at every sewing circle in America. Well, no one really suggested that. I think that competent pathologists should have examined these invaluable documents and rendered an opinion to the commission, and today, independent experts, not associated with the government, should be given the right to do that. Don't you believe that's so?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But I do think that it's not exactly fair to blame Lyndon Johnson for what Warren did or didn't do.
Well,
Provided Warren had access to those photographs, presumably the relevant question is to ask, did he feel he needed to see them? Did he feel that the centimetric measurements given to him by the doctor might have been wrong?
Of course, the FBI report originally said, the doctor ended up by saying the bullet entered the neck and exited at the throat.
Yes.
Now, we have some serious problems with that. The Secret Service agent in charge of the detail, who was in the limousine, the commission said this was the first bullet in the back, ripped through the Adam's apple. But Roy Kellerman said after the first bullet was fired, the president said, "My God, I am hit," in a clear New England Boston accent. He said it wasn't Governor Connally. He doesn't talk that way at all, which I think is quite so. Now, the question is, if the bullet hit the president in the back of the neck and ripped through his Adam's apple, and that was the first shot, how was it possible for him to say clearly and distinctly in that New England accent, "My God, I am hit"?
So I don't know.
No, neither do I.
Nor do I know whether it can be done or whether it can't be done.
With one's Adam's apple torn out.
Well, I honestly, I don't know. I don't know what you can do without an Adam's apple, without a liver.
He may have said it without a liver, yeah, but that's
I think this is one of these pyrotechnically impressive points.
Then we go to another one.
Okay, yeah, let's go to another one. But let's in the meanwhile meditate over the fact that doctors who are not, so far as we know, engaged in any kind of a conspiracy to deny you the truth reaffirm their judgment of the likelihood that it did emerge from the throat, recognize that as a result of the mutilation of the throat at the time that the tracheotomy was performed, it was impossible by visual inspection to prove it or not prove it. And let's also recognize that Mr. Redlich of the Warren Commission said that he was principally impelled to the single bullet thesis by the fact of the bullets not existing, and that under the circumstances he grants it's a hypothesis, but grants it's the most reasonable conceivable hypothesis.
It's the only hypothesis which will explain how Oswald could have been the lone assassin, and that's why it was chosen. Let me just finish the point, though, because it's more than just the inability, I think, to speak with one's Adam's apple torn out. The FBI agents, Siebert and O'Neill, who were present during the autopsy on November 22nd, quote Dr. Humes as stating, they were there, they saw the wound. The wound was some 5 inches down in the back, to the right, 2 inches to the right of the spinal column. The Dr. Humes probed the wound with his fingertip and said the bullet went in a short distance and did not exit. Now, that's the first contradiction. The doctors at Parkland Hospital who examined the wound, there was a tracheotomy, but they performed it. And before they performed it, they examined it, and they said the wound in the throat was a clear puncture wound, an entrance wound, and each of the three doctors who made a public statement that day said the wound was clearly an entrance wound.
But
is there sufficient question on this point so that Earl Warren or anyone else who wished to conduct a thorough investigation was compelled to examine the best evidence, the photographs and the x-rays?
Well, look, I wish he had, and I hope that if he doesn't, somebody else will, and preferably before sundown tomorrow. But I also believe that the investigators of the Warren Commission had every reason to suppose that the report of the autopsist was legitimate. And that report of the autopsist took every conceivable hypothesis and opted for the one they reported as the compelling one.
Well, we don't know that, because the original notes, which were prepared by Dr. Humes, who performed the autopsy, we cannot see. If we turn to volume 17, page 48, I think, we'll see the statement. This is to certify that I have destroyed by burning my original autopsy notes. The photographs and x-rays, no one has seen, unfortunately. Well, and the testimony of Jacqueline Kennedy.
Only recently, one of the autopsists divulged a sketch that he had made at the point in which he actually measured the distance between the wound and the neckline.
Right, and he put the dot
down.
It was
very inconvenient to your own thesis.
Not at all. It's completely consistent because he put the bullet down 5 inches from the neck. And if the bullet was fired from 6 stories above, entered 5 inches below the throat, how could it come out of the throat? And if it did go in that fashion, how did it then, in midair, decide to go downward and into Governor Conway's back?
Here we are off into the... Because, all right, for the record, I can answer that argument, but I think we oughtn't to try to go into them. He maintains that there was a discrepancy between his freehand drawing of the X on the back and the actual measurement.
Correct.
And I can understand that no doctor is supposed to be an artist with an absolute total precision as a draftsman when he actually has to sketch out the point.
No, but most doctors know the difference between the neck and the back, I think, even if they're not artistic.
Again,
the question is present, and there's a way to resolve it. Why can't we resolve it by examining the photographs?
I'm afoot.
All right.
But what I think we ought to discuss primarily is the extent to which, whatever the delinquencies of this examination were, and I think you will probably agree, especially as a lawyer, that if one turned somebody like you loose on the most open and shut case in the history of the world, you'd be able to write an extraordinarily ingenious book.
That's very kind
of
you.
I really believe it. And that under the circumstances, what we really have is a sort of a national obsession. All of the tributaries that flow into the making of that obsession are themselves interesting. There is the natural desire for sleuthery. Everybody's interested in it. Some people even think it's fun.
Some people would like to know who killed their president and why he died, and that's not really an obsession, is it?
Well, it is in a sense, because if he could bring him back to life, then I would agree with you, it was not an obsession. But all right, let's assume that Oswald had a cousin, and that cousin conspired with him on that grassy knoll. I think that it's in and of itself an interesting venture to try to find out who he is. I'm all for you trying to find out who he is. But I smell something else going on here. Because if there is that cousin, I doubt, A, that he will ever be found. But whether he's found or not, something else has meanwhile happened. And that is that you have apparently succeeded in persuading the majority of the American people that we cannot trust the most august conceivable panel to do a responsible job.
Yes, I believe that that is true. We cannot trust them.
And I think that the criticism is different from that. I think that we are entitled to say that this august panel didn't do the kind of a job that would protect them against Mark Lanes of the future and should have. But this is very different from the first charge.
Well, I think what we can say, I think we can go a bit beyond that, that the American people have a right to say, we cannot trust Earl Warren or the other four Republicans or the two Southern Democrats who made up the commission, which the New York Times referred to as a politically well-balanced commission.
Why did you say two Southern Democrats? Did you mean to insinuate something?
Well, of course.
What?
Surely you understand.
They're racists?
Surely you understand that in the Democratic Party there's a split and that we ended up with a commission which the New York Times assured us was politically well-balanced, but in fact we had a commission which was made up of not a single Kennedy supporter. I think that raised the question, the outset, in terms of faith. But I'd like to go beyond that, because I think that faith is really...
Not a single Kennedy supporter?
No.
Would you say that Warren was anti-Kennedy?
Well, I don't know if he was anti-Kennedy. He was a Republican. He was a Republican governor, Republican attorney general. He was a Republican candidate for the vice presidency.
But he's not a Kennedy supporter. Do you think that he would have preferred Nixon to Kennedy in 1960?
Well, that's a question you'd have to put to him. I don't know what his politics are.
But you're apparently very much interested by this. This is the workings of your mind now.
No.
Two Southern Democrats and no Kennedy supporter.
Well, don't you think
equals
that...
Equals a fix.
Well, that's your conclusion. You may be right, Bill.
But there are indignations, I think, that you're an interesting man. And the way you approach this is in and of itself interesting.
Yeah, I approach it in this way. I say if it's a politically well-balanced commission, which it was not, it still is not entitled to our faith. You talk about faith in these institutions or faith in the FBI as if it's a religious experience to read the Warren Report. I think to the contrary, that all we're supposed to have faith in a democracy is in our own ability to look at the facts and reach our own conclusions. I have not known you in the past to have invested such a vast amount of faith in either Earl Warren or in the government. And I'm surprised that in this one instance you're willing to.
I haven't, and I'll show you how.
You're watching a careful scrutiny of a careful analysis of a careful investigation. William Buckley of Mark Lane of the Warren Report. And we'll continue in just a moment.
Here, I think, is the distinction, Mr. Lane. It is one thing to say that the Warren Court or the President of the United States has bungled a job, that they have reached the wrong conclusions, that we need all the facts on the basis of which we can judge whether they were right or they were wrong. And incidentally, in a democracy, it is commonplace not to have all the facts. You certainly don't have all the facts on foreign policy on the basis of which we can say yes or no. But you, I think, are going a very considerable step further.
Yes.
You're implying something very like perfidy. And in doing so, it seems to me that there is a kinship between your approach and that, say, of Mr. Robert Welch on Eisenhower. He figures a posteriori that you can conclude that Mr. Eisenhower was a communist on the basis of the configuration. Well, you might dislike him less if you could prove it. On the basis of the configuration of the evidence of his entire career. Now, you do understand this is a graver charge than simply to say that Eisenhower is a sort of an inadequate president. But aren't you saying that Mr. Warren, I mean, you actually said that the police in Dallas actually suppressed the right rifle and surfaced the rifle.
I haven't said that. I raised the facts.
Your committee in 1964 said serious questions must be asked as to possible police participation in the assassination.
Well, the commission took the same position, that those questions had to be asked, conducted investigation, and they were satisfied. I'm not satisfied that the investigation on that question was adequately conducted.
Who uses the word serious? Yours? Because...
Suppose
I were to say, the question has arisen whether Eisenhower is a communist. Hmm. That's different from saying serious questions have arisen as to whether or not he's a communist, isn't it? Obviously, the Warren Commission has to recognize the raising of questions, But the word serious is an evaluative adjective, and that is yours, as I understand it.
I don't know if I use it. I would use it at this point, certainly, in examining the evidence. Yes, there are serious questions. We have a Dallas police officer who finds a weapon, says it's a German Mauser, 7.65 millimeters.
Mr. Weitzman, is that?
Yes.
But he never examined it personally, did he?
Well, this is what else he said. It had a 4.18 scope. The bolt was worn in the back and was blue. He described the sling and the stock. That's a great deal of information to have, as the commission said, at a glance. Then we have Captain Fritz, who picked up the weapon and ejected one live round from it and said it was a German Mauser. And we have another Dallas deputy sheriff also saying it was a German Mauser. And now we have the Warren Commission reporting the FBI the following day said that their records show that Oswald had purchased an Italian carbine caliber 6.5, and all of a sudden the Dallas police say that's what we found yesterday. Now, I examined that rifle when I testified before the commission. I don't know very much about foreign weapons. I know a little bit about American Army weapons, but it's a foreign weapon. But at once I knew it was not a German Mauser 7.65 millimeters, because in large, clear letters it said on it, made Italy caliber 6.5. The commission implies that Weitzman must be some kind of a fool, and one, assuming he's a Dallas policeman, might accept that too quickly. But he was, in fact, a graduate college engineer. He owned a sporting goods shop where he sold rifles and said he's quite familiar with weapons. Well, then Weitzman testified before the commission. Is it not elementary to show him the weapon, the Italian car cannon?
No, other things are elementary, too. I think if I were a Dallas policeman, prepared to devote my life to confusing you, one of the things I would do, if I, if in the course of a working day I assassinated the President of the United States, is to simply not arrange for it so that a policeman that I wasn't sure of wouldn't be the first into this room to make that...
But you say if the police were involved in the assassination, which is not an assumption I've made.
Well, it's something about which you want to raise, quote, serious questions.
Well, certainly serious questions must be raised. Yeah. When an old, corrupt, and intimate friend of the Dallas police force, when there's evidence given to the commission showing that this man, Jack Ruby, was the bag man for the Dallas underworld, paying off the Dallas police. There's a vast amount of evidence of that nature, which the commission, of course, discounted and never even considered. But in any event, it was an old friend of the police
force. Well, how is it relevant? Why should it consider it?
Why should they consider how Ruby entered the basement to kill Oswald, and whether or not his relationship with the Dallas police who allowed him to enter is a question.
I think everybody knows that Ruby was sort of a character around town, that he was known to the police, that he was sort of a camp follower of the police.
Well, how did he get in the basement?
There seems to be no question that he got in precisely because people would think he was harmless.
Well, not at all.
There are a dozen people in this room who could get in precisely because of their familiarity with the surroundings, and precisely suspicion would not attach.
Well, that's a broad generalization, but when you look at the specific evidence, we have a former Dallas police officer, N.J. Daniels, standing at the Main Street ramp. With him is Officer Vaughn, the officer on guard. And Daniels testified that he saw Ruby coming. Ruby had his hand in his jacket pocket. There was a large bulge. It appeared to him that Ruby had a pistol in his pocket, and he was alarmed. And he thought that Vaughn was going to stop him, the officer on guard. But Vaughn looked at him, he said, seemed to recognize him. And then Ruby went right in. It was only a 9-foot entrance, and there were two men standing there. Ruby would practically have to say, excuse me, to pass by. Now, the commission said that he didn't notice him go in.
But, Mr. Lane,
but that's not what the evidence shows.
Surely one of your difficulties is that when you get down to focus on improbabilities, you would really be committed to the notion that no chief of state could ever get murdered, because such are the improbabilities. But we know that people, I'm sure Julius Caesar was more surprised than the chief of the Dallas police when Brutus pulled his knife out. I'm sure there was a bulge there, but nobody thought to detain him.
And they know who did it right on the
scene.
I'm
sure you could write a book and prove that Brutus was innocent.
No, we know who did it right on the scene, and I think those who criticize the Dallas police should remember that they did catch Oswald's assailant very quickly.
Yes.
Yes, that's something in their favor.
Yeah, but that's right. That's,
but in addition to this,
that's of course sarcastic, isn't it? Yeah.
For a moment, I wasn't sure you got that.
I've been practicing.
It certainly was intended that way. I'm not sure it achieved it. But the point is, I think, that in the midst of the greatest security precautions ever taken, it was not Caesar who was killed by Brutus, but President Kennedy, who was killed by someone, and with the FBI, Secret Service, and Dallas police on hand, whoever did it escaped from the scene. Mm-hmm. If for no other reason, I think we have to give consideration to the very poor protection and poor detective work done at the scene and poor security by Mr. Hoover's legions and by the Secret Service and by the Dallas police and deputy sheriffs.
Let me at this point level with you, Miss Lane, because there's a sense in which I am not a natural adversary of yours here. I don't care really who killed Mr. Kennedy. I care very much that he's dead, but I don't care very much who killed him. And if it turns out to be somebody else, then I say, all right, it's somebody else that's prosecuted him. Let's string
well,
him
that's
up.
If it's
let's do whatever.
That's if it's Oswald's cousin. But if it's if it's something which is more significant than that, you would care. Might care if it was something of great political significance.
I would say this, that nobody who probably assassinated Kennedy other than Oswald would the discovery of do more to disrupt this nation than if your thesis is ultimately taken seriously, that we have Dallas policemen and participating and raising serious questions about whether they participated in the assassination of Kennedy, that we have a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court who's willing to conspire to prevent us from having the truth, that we have a crooked and corrupt president and an indifferent members of the Kennedy family who are not willing to cooperate in a true investigation. So nothing much worse, I think, is going to happen, even if we forage in that knoll of yours.
Well, except you say you're willing to...
Then, in effect, what is happening is a result of people's lazy acceptance of your own thesis.
It wasn't lazy. It was very hard to come by.
No, lazy acceptance. Yes. No. I think you're a Stakhanovite worker on this. I don't know anybody who knows as much about the case as you do.
That was meant
for
about
lazy acceptance, yeah.
Yes.
That's right. You've only sold 250,000 books, and you say 65% of the American people agree with your thesis. So
I say Lou Harris said
a lot of people agree with your thesis who haven't read your book.
Mm. Uh-huh. Well, originally, of course, everyone agreed with the Warren Report before there even was one, including you, as a matter of fact.
Sure.
Because you said very soon after the assassination that you completely accepted. It was not Earl Warren.
I did.
It wasn't Earl Warren then.
No,
it was the Dallas police you accepted then. You had faith in them.
Well,
I think that's going too far.
Well, yes, it may be going too far, but there's a sense in which I felt that the interests of truth were being defended by Robert Kennedy.
Robert Kennedy was in Indonesia at the time.
Robert Kennedy was in the airport in Washington when the body arrived.
Oh, yes, at that time.
I felt that Mr. Kennedy would look after the interests of truth, and that if Mr. Kennedy was willing to accept the judgment, I was willing to accept it, because
but
I assume that since he was the Attorney General of the United States, he would look into the possibility that people were being debonair about who killed his brother, the president.
Well, of course, you don't place that faith in Robert Kennedy in everything that he says.
Certainly not.
And the second
I think
I think with good reason that you don't.
That's irrelevant. I'm talking about something highly personal.
Yeah, but
I would have great faith in you if you told me that you were satisfied that Mr. X was the person who killed your brother, and vice versa, even though I would disagree with you about any number of political
matters. Well, now
let's
look at Robert Kennedy as an expert on the question. He's never read the Warren Commission report, much less the 26 volumes of evidence. I think that eliminates him
no,
as an expert.
No, it doesn't. No, this is naive and
why
and
is it naive to think that an examination of the evidence is irrelevant to a determination as to what happened?
Most of what we know prescriptively. I know how to establish that the Earth is round because I read somewhere in an encyclopedia how you go about doing it, but I never have.
Well, that's not a matter of contention at the moment.
No, it's not a matter of contention.
But who killed President Kennedy
But if you were to ask me at this moment, have you ever checked on the roundness of the Earth? You are otherwise not qualified to speak on it. The answer is no.
Yeah, but the analogy, I think, fails. I think the analogy fails because there is a question as to who killed President Kennedy, and there is no question today with thinking people as to whether or not the Earth is round. Let's take a controversial question and see if you're willing to accept the conclusion based upon no knowledge, just faith.
We'll have more questions as well as more answers. You are watching Firing Line with William F. Buckley, Jr., tonight's guest, Mark Lane. Our topic, the Warren Report, fact or fiction. We'll continue in just a moment. Continuing now with Firing Line, we have our question and answer period. First, Mr. Buckley, this question to you. At this perspective from the assassination, how would you assess its political impact, especially upon the career of Senator Robert Kennedy?
I don't think it has, at least the questions that are raised tonight, have anything to do with the career of Mr. Kennedy. I think that they might very well have something to do with the career of Lyndon Johnson, because if the suspicion ever becomes widespread that President Johnson is himself responsible for preventing people from getting to the truth of the subject, then they will not only think that this is a failure of the president to exercise his duty, but also that the president has something to fear from the ventilation of the truth. And of course, there are already people around, the cretins, who are actually suggesting that Mr. Lyndon Johnson in some way might have been implicated in the assassination. So that Mr. Johnson's future career, I think, might very easily be influenced by the results of this question.
Mr. Lane, would you care to comment on that question or on Mr. Buckley's answer?
I think it's a sound analysis, and I think that it can be harmful to President Johnson's career. But since his main rival in the Democratic Party for the nomination, if not in 1968, and as his successor, appears to be Robert Kennedy at the moment, I think it could affect his career not adversely at all, which is not the purpose, I assure you, of my raising the questions.
Mr. Lane, to your way of thinking, what individual or what group of individuals stood to gain most from the assassination?
Well, that really calls for some speculation on my part. I think that area has been preempted by the Warren Commission. I prefer to stay in the area of fact. I think the only way to know the politics of the assassins is to catch them and ask them.
On the other hand, if you were to conjecture, Mr. Lane, what would your conjecture be?
Since I won't, I can't say.
Mr. Buckley, would you care to conjecture?
Well, yes. It seems to me that it would just be absolutely divine if it could be proved that Mr. Oswald was subsidized by H.L. Hunt and the John Birch Society, the Minutemen, given a little moral support by a National Review, that Goldwater cleared it. That would be sort of the ne plus ultra in causing delight in many quarters of the United States. From the point of view, of course, if it were proved that Oswald was a working agent of the Soviet Union, even if it was not proved, or not inferable that he actually executed the president at the orders of the party, then certain other people would take comfort in the refortification of their own notions about the existence of the internal menace. Mr. Lane wants to abolish the House Committee on Un-American Activities, which House Committee on American Activities might here and now spot an occasional Oswald, I admit.
Well, they haven't, have they?
How do you know?
Well, we know
that... We haven't assassinated presidents frequently enough to know.
Well, we do know that the FBI knew of Oswald's background, that they knew he worked in the Book Depository building. They knew that that building was on the presidential route. And Mr. Hostie, the FBI agent who had seen Oswald's family about 2 weeks before, never did anything about that. Mm-hmm. And here we have, in the midst of the greatest security precautions, this man, who would have been fingered, of course, by the Un-American Activities Committee had they known about him, walked right into the building, according to the commission, carrying a rifle. Mm-hmm. And here the FBI knew about it and did nothing about
it. But Mr. Hoover also said, look, if you want me to, I'll round up everybody who is a conceivable presidential assassin.
Well, we know he's too much of a civil libertarian to do that.
We know that you wouldn't let him do it. Otherwise, obviously, he'd prefer a police state, wouldn't he? But he said that this would make it, for instance, if the president went to Chicago, the entire population of Chicago would be decimated if you had to lock up anybody who had any kind of a record.
It's a terrible thing to say about Chicago, I think.
Mr. Buckley, I think this leads us naturally enough into another question. You admit on the one hand that you've not carefully studied the Warren Commission report, that you are generally satisfied even though you've not examined the evidence carefully. Would you have been quite so relaxed and offhand if the commission had concluded it was the work of a right-winger?
Certainly.
Anything you'd like to say, Mr.
Yes, well, my point, Mr. Scott, is that it was the work of a madman.
Yes.
I took this position from the moment the assassination was talked about, that it was so crazy an act, so wretched and sinister an act, that it was simply unlikely that it was the natural workings of a tight, coordinated ideological system. That it was much rather and much more probably the workings of somebody who's individually impelled to act.
I'd like to ask Mr. Lane one quick question, if I may. If Congress were to open its own inquiry into the investigation of the assassination, rather, whom would you consider competent to serve on such a panel?
It's a serious problem. I would have said Earl Warren perhaps some time ago.
But and Norman Mailer?
Well, I would have said Earl Warren some time ago, but I don't think I can say that now in view of his track record on this question. I think that what is more important than who serves on the commission is the methods employed by the commission. If they're open in public hearings, the last roll behind closed doors, with exception of my own testimony, if the evidence is made available, if we respect the adversary procedure and submit all of the evidence to the crucible of cross-examination, and the American people see all of this take place, then I think we can have some faith in it. But I would like to see competent, non-governmental pathologists from the leading medical schools, for example, serve, and other experts from the leading universities, law professors, and others serve on such a commission.
We'll return to William F. Buckley in just a moment.
Well, Mr. Lane, thank you very much for coming, and I hope that everyone who has a doubt in his mind will read your book, and read also the book of Mr. Liebler, if he publishes Defending the Warren Commission, and other works on the subject. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Good night.
Buckley.
Good night.
Okay, folks, that's the end of the show. I'm glad we had time to play all of William F. Buckley's interview with Mark Lane. For those of you watching the video later, it's linked below this video. So really, if you look back in time now, from that time, 1966, Robert Kennedy was dead 2 years later, on June 6, 1966, assassinated by Thane Eugene Caesar, and they blame it on Saran Saran, who's still in jail today. So this is earth-shattering information affecting the entire world. So it's been a really good show today on Revolution Radio, if I must say so myself. So time's up, folks. I hear the closing music. So come back next week. Don't forget to donate to Revolution Radio and listen to The Brian Roux Show. Thanks for listening, folks.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and